Mrs. Barry took with a warm welcome to the second part of my selection of the choicest morsels from the news quiz during 1993. The latter part of the year saw more than its fair share of news events surrounding the greatest players on the world stage, but we still weren't going to let a little thing like that affect us on the news quiz. For example, even our current Prime Minister's best friends probably wouldn't describe John Major as the most exciting of characters. So, who then thought him the worthy subject of a biography? And was the man himself excited by the idea? An even more interesting question was whether Richard Ingrams would have the slightest idea. Richard, your turn again. Who enigmatically missed the launch of a lifetime?
I think this is the Prime Minister again.
It is.
Who was engaged in something called a charm offensive. We're aware. Well, that, no, that was why he missed this launch of this book by a former Private Eye contributor, Miss Penny Junor, who produced a book called The Enigma.
That's right.
Major.
I love the idea that Major's an enigma. Apart from how did he get the job? There seem to be many unanswered questions.
Is it a misprint for enema?
It is the enigmatic John Major, who was represented at the launch of his biography by a realistic cardboard cutout. In fact, it was frighteningly realistic, as it failed to make any decisions and everyone ignored it. The biography is lavishly illustrated in black and grey, or as the Prime Minister calls it, full colour. Andy, will you listen to this?
Sorry.
That's what they call rap music.
That was the delightful ballad I Will Always Love You, sung more or less by Whitney Houston. And your question is, Andy, what love song fell upon deaf ears eventually?
This was the story of a person who played this song incessantly at very high volume, and their neighbours took them to court, and rather startlingly, they were sent to jail, which I think is very unfair, because surely it's Whitney Houston who should go to jail. And the basic cause of the offence is Whitney's, isn't it?
This is all about Helen Stevens, who was jailed for 7 days after a court heard how she subjected her neighbours to a 6-week barrage of I Will Always Love You, the ballad by Whitney Houston, the well-known vocalist and jet engine. Such was the volume that workmen using a hydraulic sledgehammer could sing along with the words. Miss Stevens, or as she's known next door, Parton, played the song as a tribute to its writer, Dolly Parton, the statuesque star best remembered for a couple of biggies in the 70s. Before we take a look at events on the other side of the world, let's hear how Brighton sees itself in a cutting sent to us by resident of that town, Robert Brignall, and read by Catriona Young.
The New York Times, one of the world's most influential newspapers, has labelled Brighton as Britain's Costa Geriatrica and the historic lanes as a slum. The insults, along with other contemptuous and patronising remarks, are contained in a travel article published by the world-famous American paper. Now Brighton's head of tourism, Martin Sirk, is writing to the editor demanding an apology. He told the leader, "The article is bizarre, insulting and misleading. It sounds more like Blackpool than Brighton."
1993 was the year in which Manchester was saddened to hear that it was not to host the Olympic Games. A pity, because it's a fine city with much to commend it, and it enjoyed the full-hearted support of our sports-loving Prime Minister. You have to feel for British athletes who won't now have the chance of a lifetime trip to Manchester. Mind you, they can always temper their disappointment with a midweek intercity super saver instead. In fact, the games were awarded to Sydney. But how did Australia choose to commiserate with the old mother country in her moment of loss? And your question is, Alan, who will be performing The Last Night of the Ponds in 2001?
Oh, well, I mean, both barrels this week. This is the Lizard of Oz. This is Keating, isn't it? And
the Lizard of Oz.
The man who was working the Queen like sooty, I remember last year. did him no good at all. They had this audience and a barbecue. Could you imagine a barbecue? Wonderful thought. Come the raw prawn with me anyway. He's got the Olympic Games. He's going to have the Republic. And it's Keating who's going to be the president of everything. And absolutely, he's come here in 2001 with all that wonderful music. It's going to be his.
Does refer to Paul Keating, Labour Prime Minister of Australia, land of weird specimens such as the wallaby, the Tasmanian devil, and the cast of Prisoner Cell Block H. And even more weird, a Labour Prime Minister. Good heavens, they still have those, yes. Mr. Keating visited the Queen to tell her what happens in 2001, but she didn't mind as she'd already rented the video, and she knew that the ending... While he was there, he also explained his country is to become a republic. Mr. Keating then went off to Ireland to see the town his family had left in the 1850s, when they departed down under on an assisted passage. As it was known in those days, a conviction of sheep rustling. Mark, will you please listen to this? That was Red Red Wine by UB40. And your question is, Mark, what vintage cure is bomb-proof? Emphasis on vintage, I think.
Vintage.
And bomb-proof.
I think of a perfect answer about wine being found at the bottom of the sea in a submarine. Mm.
No, I think we know it.
Don't want to boast, but we do.
No, well, you look discreet, as you
like. Well, if you insist. Well, it's Bulgarian, Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's right.
Researchers in Bulgaria have found that if you drink a lot of Bulgarian Cabernet Sauvignon, it saves you from radiation sickness. which I must say, I've always found to be the case.
Yes, it is the news that drinking red wine can help protect against radiation poisoning, which means the most likely survivors of a direct nuclear strike on London would be Oliver Reed and Princess Margaret. The discovery was made at the Bulgarian National Wine Institute by Dr. Kirill Fartsov, who's had to drink so much of it he daren't attempt to say his own name. While we're on the subject of good food and wine, let's have a cutting spotted for us by Terry Hawkin of Leeds.
The last Viceroy Indian restaurant, once tried, never forgotten. Numerous waiters running around to your beck and call with food that would suit even the most developed palates. So if you've tried Indian food before, even if you didn't enjoy it, try the last Viceroy. Guarantees four-course meal in and out within 45 minutes.
It's quite widely accepted these days that a healthy diet coupled with regular exercise can play an important part in prolonging active life. But according to the papers, the sexes seem to have found this yet another subject over which to disagree. Who better to put some flesh on the bones of this one than probably the most famous feminist writer of them all, Germaine Greer? Germaine, who's more likely to be floored by flaws in his lifestyle? About chaps being fat and lazy and obese and that type of thing.
Yes.
Well, that's everybody, isn't it? I mean, any obese person is likely to be flawed.
Fat. Men die quicker than women?
Yes.
Especially fat men with short necks.
Don't look
I love you too,
like
Germaine.
That.
But I can't imagine which particular man. Is there a particular...
No. It's all men. It's a survey. It's one of these surveys that we get on this programme quite a lot.
So you won't know about this because it's about the very raw deal that men get in out of life.
Go it, Richard. You're on a roll. Let me put you all out of your misery. This is the Department of Health report that revealed that men drink and eat too much compared to women who also take more exercise. Presumably, women don't have time to sit about overeating while they're running around looking after fat, idle men all day. Clive, who washed up a record after an adventure at bath time?
I'm trying to focus in on the clue word there. Oh, Richard Ingram knows it. So somebody does the Guinness World Record of washing up?
Well, sort of on those lines, but I'll pass it to Francis Ween.
It's an American who crossed the Atlantic in a bathtub, five foot long.
Absolutely right.
And has flown back first class saying he never wants to do it again. But why he ever wanted to do it in the first place?
It is the American sailor. Quite right, Francis. The American sailor who took 104 days to cross the Atlantic in a 5'4" bathtub. He would have arrived sooner, but he had to keep getting out to answer the phone. Hugo Wilhén's record breaker was half an inch shorter than the previous holder's. That's what you get for sitting in a bathtub for 3 months. Adulation. The 61-year-old retired airline pilot claimed at one point an imminent whale attack had him reaching for his emergency flares. So as well as being mad, he's also hugely unfashionable. Wilhelm believes he will try and beat his own record in a smaller bathtub, but during that voyage he will sit at the opposite end from the taps. That chap in the bathtub may have taken his life in his hands crossing the Atlantic, but he should count himself lucky not to have pitched up off Budley Salterton, as Peter Donaldson pointed out for us with an item found by Mrs. Veronica Young of Coulsdon.
Budley Salterton Beach has been branded a health risk in a tough new guide to bathing beaches in the UK. The survey claims that tests carried out on the seawater off Budley Salterton Beach failed to meet the rigorous standards of cleanliness and water quality required by the European Bathing Water Guideline standards. District Councillor Ray Franklin said, "It's hardly surprising. On the one side we have the Exmouth outfall pipe, and on the other the Ex estuary pipe. Budley is simply caught between two stools at the moment."
Every year, as autumn closes in and the days become shorter and the weather ever more unfriendly, the major political parties selflessly try to brighten our days by staging their annual conferences. This year's meeting of the Tories was to prove every bit as riveting as usual, especially discovering who was to blame for the largest budget deficit since records began. Ian, who has 331 million reasons not to benefit from a red face?
This is Peter Lilly.
Quite right.
Yes, he'd had a very successful black shirt rally. Blackpool rally. In which he made one of those caring, sensitive speeches about how the loss of money and the budget deficit was all the fault of three single mothers in Cardiff. But then it transpired rather amusingly that his own department had managed to lose entirely by incompetence about £331 million, which is more money than all his stupid measures would have saved anyway.
It's Peter Lilly and his team at the DSS. They've managed to overspend a massive sum in the welfare benefits, so would the person who received the gyro last week for £331 million and 48p. Please send it back to Mr. Lilly or to any of his immediate staff, Eva, Unity or Benito. It was, of course, Mr. Lilly who attacked scroungers of all sorts, and especially the growth in claims from single mothers. So any young woman thinking of getting into that condition should think again and stay away from cabinet ministers. Andy, your question now. Who were tailor-made to be as sick as parrots?
This is presumably a reference to England's football team,
right,
who went down in glorious defeat. Due to the fact that the Dutch cheated by passing the ball along the ground to each other. I actually only caught the last 10 minutes, which I was very pleased about. But I turned on it, and Graham Taylor was saying that blonde man shouldn't have been on the pitch. I didn't know there was a rule about blonde men not being... not being allowed on the pitch.
I think it was a great pity about that bloke Gunter Praeg.
Who?
The one who knifed Monica Seles. Because he had an infatuation with Steffi Graf and couldn't stand the idea of anybody beating her. And if only he'd fallen in love with Graham Taylor.
This was the England football team who lost 2-0 to Holland, although experts say England should have won 8-2 on excuses after extra time. Following the dreadful scenes in Rotterdam, the FA have issued a list of those who won't be allowed to travel to America. They are Taylor, Platt, Merson, Dorigo, Allen. Listen to this.
It's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard.
Well, that was A Hard Rain's a Gonna Fall by Roxy Music. Alan, how is a wet spell causing deep trouble?
Oh, it's been the wettest something in living memory. It's probably been the wettest rain in living memory. But anyway, it's, even as we speak, people are floating by in their rowing boats, clutching their transistor radios in the hope of getting the news quiz. I mean, that's about all it is, isn't it? I mean, it's rained forever. It has never stopped raining.
Since records began.
Yes.
And I wonder, when did the records begin? Every time they say that.
Andy and I came in here two by two, just to be on the safe side.
That's right, it's the shock news that it's been raining quite a lot in October. Yet another scoop for the news quiz. As rainfall figures exceed all previous records, the emergency service are at full stretch. The AA were called out after an Austin Metro slipped its anchor on the M4. The police are trying to cope with a spate of ram sailing. And the fire brigade have been rescuing pet fish trapped in trees. One landlord cut off in his pub said he felt like Canute. And after his customers were stuck there all night, most of them were like Canutes as well. And the soul... Let's hear from Catriona again, with an example of the kind of thing she occasionally has to put up with on the news quiz. Thanks this time to the keen eye of Mrs. Janet Buzzard of Bushy in Hertfordshire.
Eric Nicolai, chief executive of United Biscuits, has no plans to introduce Nobby's Nuts in Britain following yesterday's acquisition. Down under, the popular snack slogan is Nibble Nobby's Nuts. May I finish?
Be my guest.
Down under, the popular snack slogan is Nibble Nobby's Nuts. You can't lick 'em for taste.
Well done, Catriona. One of those events that pops up every year is the Booker Prize. Along with other annual events like the Queen's Speech, the Elton John Farewell Concert, and the end of the recession, it can become a bit of a problem to think of something original to say. But would this be the year someone other than the judges had actually read the winning novel? Excitement mounted as suddenly, on the very same day, one of our political leaders was involved in a slight fracas outside the House. With it came the very real chance we might never find out who the winner was. Peter, what did Paddy win?
Paddy Ashdown... managed to drive his car into a motorcycle. He was not at the wheel. He has never been at the wheel. But I imagine the question refers to the Booker Prize. And the unsurprising victory.
That's it, right, Peter. It's the annual Booker Prize, a £20,000 cheque and a £1.20 book token, which was won by Roddy Doyle for Paddy Clark. Ha, ha, ha. The judges made their final decision from a short list which read like a veritable Who's That? Oh. Baroness Thatcher's book, The Downing Street Years, Ho, Ho, Ho. It concludes with the former Prime Minister tearfully leaving office, failed to make the list, despite having a wonderfully happy ending. Yeah. Stephen, who failed the test for the pupils?
It's so difficult, this is because every day in the newspaper, I've been reading newspapers this week because I knew I was going to do this programme, you didn't just pull me off the street, and I don't usually use them, but every day there is always some test or some survey or something, which usually I can talk about for long enough to give Alan Curran a chance to write something down. Her Majesty's Inspector for Schools inspected and has come up with this news.
Peter's got an alternative answer.
Yes,
let's, much better.
Not about Paddy Ashdown, is it?
Come on, Pete.
Virginia Bottomley failed her eye test. She was unable to find marks and sparks early in the morning.
Her pupils failed her, is that what you mean?
Pupils
I see.
Her.
Did you know, as a matter of interest, he's probably been in the eye, but it's just so extraordinary, it makes you wonder if there is a God controlling our language, that Virginia Bottomley, and you can work this out with a piece of paper and pencil at home, is an anagram of I'm an evil Tory bigot. Weird, isn't it?
Anyway, the answer to the question, who failed the test of the pupils, is Her Majesty's inspectors, who took a week off from inspecting Her Majesty and went out looking for a working-class school instead. Their report was published by the Education Standards Watchdog, off bunk, and concluded that teaching was superficial, dull, undemanding, and the only thing that kids were learning was apathy when they could be bothered to turn up. Alan, what price of admission is providing food for thought?
This is Virginia Bottomley, who wants us to pay for our food in hospitals and other National Health Service things, so that if you're sitting there in agony with a large spotted dick and the the consultant will come round and say, if you want custard on that, it's another 10 bob. Get out of that.
It is Health Secretary Virginia Bottomley, or as she's known in the NHS, the Right Honourable Handmaiden of Beelzebub MP, who is considering making charges for hospital food. If found guilty, NHS cooks could face a 3-year prison sentence. The stories from the law courts are bottomless mines of mirth for those of us with an ear for the delights of pomposity. Take this cutting as an example of how the English legal system never ceases to strive to achieve the victory of right over wrong.
A juror who arrived wearing combat trousers, bullet belts across his chest, fingerless gloves, a mobile phone, and a television aerial and filofax dangling from his waist was dismissed from the Old Bailey for refusing to take his hat off in court.
And thank you, Michael Robinson from Huddersfield, for sending us that snippet. Another area of unintentional entertainment, and not always that far removed from the courts, is to be found in that big building in London's Southwest One, with the big clock and the flag on top. You know the place, where MPs rush back from holidays and social events selflessly to attend to grave matters of state. The question is, Clive, who's a shadow of his former self after his defence had a fine time, by George? There's a rich...
Who's sentence. A shadow of his former self
after his defence is about a drunk.
Are we talking about Fuchs?
Or Fowkes, as we like to call him.
Oh, sorry.
I don't mind.
I met him after dark, so it's... now, he's somebody who used to be big in the shadow cabinet, and he went to a reception of the Scottish Whiskey Producers Association and had one over the 20 and was rushing back for a 3-line whip, or 6-line whip, as he thought it was. I think they finally got him because he hit a policeman, but along the way he was dancing with old-age pensioners in the street, and he had a fine old time, and... I don't know what he was. He was Shadow Minister of Transport or something. And he had to resign, which was rather sadly.
He was Shadow Minister of Defence. Yes. He was in charge of Labour's non-nuclear pacifist defence policy.
Well, and hitting a policeman has always been Labour Party policy. So I think he was OK on that one.
This is George Fowkes, Labour MP and part-time consultant to the Scotch whisky industry, who was fined £1,000 plus costs after getting consulted as a newt. Mr. Fowkes' family motto, a for ye go, base over apex. I did he resigned as shadow defence spokesman before pleading guilty to getting drunk and assaulting a police officer. His shadow defence lawyer, Mr. Duncan Disorderly, explained the behaviour was because Mr. Fowkes doesn't drink whiskey. Mind you, that 15-year-old Malt Perrier does not pack a punch. Mark, why might I be wishing you a happy September the 15th?
September the 15th is Black Wednesday. Yes. Or it was last year, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. Answer him, Mark.
Go on, Francis.
It's an astronomer at Sheffield University who has done some calculations and decided that Christmas Day should be on the 15th of September, which is something that's already well known to department stores, which is why they start putting their Christmas decorations on.
Madame Frances. It's astronomer Dr. David Hughes who claims Christmas Day should be celebrated on September the 15th. Dr. Hughes bases his theory on historical evidence, specifically a recently unearthed September issue of the Christmas Radio Times 7BC, which features the traditional 3 o'clock speech from King Herod, followed by an audience with Dame Barbara Cartland. That's a repeat from 8BC. I'll say goodbye now, and thank you for listening, both now and throughout the year. And a special word of thanks to the many hundreds of listeners who sent us those weird and wonderful cuttings. Talking of which, let some of the regulars finish off in traditional style with their favourites. Richard, have you brought a jolly cutting for us?
This is a strange story in the Daily Telegraph about a man called Purefoy, who's approached, like many of us are, by a Jehovah's Witness. It says, the two struck up a friendly conversation which turned inevitably to the Bible. I just said that I thought it was odd the Bible doesn't mention dinosaurs. And he punched me in the face. A square-jawed type, Purefoy, lifted his assailant into the air and threw him to the ground, shouting, I hope Jehovah witnessed that.
Alan.
I have one, Barry, from Thursday's Daily Telegraph. It says, animal lovers broke into a car in Wangari, New Zealand, to rescue a dog locked in the back. It was a stuffed dog put there to deter people from breaking into the car.
Hi, what have you brought?
Well, I've got rather a long one, actually, and it's... comes from George Keeling in Derbyshire from the Aberdeen Press and Journal. That in fact, it relays what a report which was in El Universal, which is a Venezuelan paper, and it reports on news in England. And this is its, how it appeared over there. This is how we appear to others. Crisis in England. Guard changed at Buckingham Palace. Elizabeth Glamis Windsor, alias Bowes Lyon, Queen Mother of Elizabeth II, Queen of England, was taken ill with a mystery throat sickness during a visit to Balmoral, a castle in the mountainous interior of a northern province. Elizabeth Glamis Windsor was hospitalised at Aberdeen, a frontier oil town on the east coast, where there is a royalist hospital. As surgeons battled day and night to save the mother of the Queen, sources in London confirmed that troops commanded by Charles, Prince of Wales, the estranged husband of Lady Princess Diana, had been forced to withdraw from the capital and been replaced at Buckingham Palace by troops loyal to Queen England and her husband, known as the Duke. A spokesman for the English Tourist Board said it will be safe to visit Buckingham Palace this summer, as it is most unlikely that fighting will break out between army units commanded by the Prince and the remainder of the military.
Part two of the News Quiz Choice Cuts of 1993 was presented by Barry Took. Aiding and abetting regular team captains, Richard Ingrams and Alan Corran, were Francis Ween, Ian Hislop, Andy Hamilton, Mark Lawson, Jermaine Greer, Clive Anderson, Peter Cook, Stephen Fry, and Mark Stein. The cuttings were read by Katrina Young and Peter Donaldson. The programmes were written by Robert Fraser-Steele and Ian Pattinson, and the producer was John Naismith.